This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest, Dr. Mark Welch. Mark is a Texas A&M AgriLife Extension grain marketing economist in College Station. Recently, a presentation at the Plains Cotton Growers annual meeting. More on that coming up. First off, Jessica Grosskopf is a University of Nebraska-Lincoln economist.
We believe that between 50 and 60% of farm and ranch families do not have a solid succession plan in place. And so, again, that's a little bit different than an estate plan. A succession plan says that we've identified that heir and we're actually passing the business to someone else, where an estate plan is simply those end of life documents. So when it comes to that succession side, there's a very high percentage that have not identified who that heir, related or not related, will be.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Dr. Mark Welch is a Texas A&M AgriLife Extension grain marketing economist, earlier this year with a grain outlook.
Corn yields, USDA is throwing out 181 bushels, all-time record high. Well, last year was 179. It was a record. 2023 was 177. That was an all-time record. So, we've hit two records in a row. Could we hit another one with a good year? I think it's entirely possible. But think about, if we're increasing acres this year to the degree we are, where are those acres going to be? We're planting more in Texas. You look across the South, and Mississippi is a state, strong increase in acres down there. How will those acres contribute to the overall national average? We may be expanding corn acres in places that may not raise the national average to the degree that we might see otherwise. So maybe a little degree of caution of plugging in a yield number, but does 181 seem within reach in a normal year? I couldn't argue with that number. It would be a tremendous number, first time ever over 180. But we'll see if we get there. This is what we looked at coming out of the Outlook Conference in February from USDA for 25-26. Then I updated that with prospective plantings number. And all I did was change the acres and the harvested acres based on that change, left all the other supply and demand numbers exactly the same. We were looking for about a 3% increase in supply, given 181 bushel yield and 94 million acres. Now we're looking at a 4% change in supply, given 95 million acres, and yield the same at 181. So a 4% change in supply, what are we going to do in demand to compensate for that? Well, at this point, we're looking at about a 1% increase in supply. So that leaves us a deficit of about 2%. So the typical relationship, again, if it's 4 to 5% for 1% change in supply, to see a price decline of 8 to 10% would not be surprising. And so that's USDA's number back in February, a 420 price for the season average farm price for corn in the U.S. Using those kind of numbers, my models would kick that number down with a 95, if we plant 95, and if we see demand at these levels, kick that carryover if we go from 37 days to 47 days to 52 days. You see where this is headed, a price from 435 to 420, and I've got us down to 385 by the time we get to next year. This is that relationship looks over time. There's our 40-day carryover. This is your days of use on hand at the end of the marketing year. There's your season average farm price. At the Outlook Conference, USDA landed about here. Now, $4.20 a bushel on a 44-day carryover. Plug in that higher corn acre number. Now we're pushing that planted, with prospective plantings report, now we're pushing that out around 50-day carryover, and we can certainly see prices sub $4. But again, that's in normal weather, the values of use that we've got built into that table. A lot of things are going to change around that. The market is certainly not trading like we're going to be at $4 corn by the time we get to this fall. But I think the fundamental factors are there in place. If it does start to evolve in a way that supports those kind of numbers, this thing could get weak by the time we get to next fall.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Dr. Mark Welch is a Texas A&M AgriLife Extension grain marketing economist speaking earlier this year.
We got prices first. This is what the seasonal pattern of that December contract usually looks like. Some strength from January up to June. Then we drop and kind of consolidate around the 4th of July, around 50% level of the year's prices, price range. And then here's our fall harvest at September and October, hit a low, and then kind of a post-harvest rally. And this is our pattern over the last several weeks. Significant drop starting in early February around the Outlook Conference, trade issues becoming, I think, more of a reality, more in more perspective. So we've dropped that back to 440. I think it's a critical level that we hold at this point. If we're getting upward momentum yet before we see maybe the season high this year and to see if that's in. But typically we set that high before we get to the first part of July. So that's corn prices. There's wheat. We got a bigger wheat crop globally than last year. Wheat production is higher in our major producing areas. We've got a bigger crop again, bigger crop in China, big crop coming out of India. We had a bigger crop here in the U.S., a good strength year to year, a big crop there in Australia. So we've got some major participants had a bigger crop this year. But the carryover situation globally for wheat is just like it is for corn. This is your global number for carryover, days of use on hand, at the end of the marketing year. Gold bars are outside the U.S. The black line is that global number. It has been on the decline for the last 3 or 4 years. That world global situation for wheat is relatively tight, the tightest we've been in 10 years. And so, again, a major production disruption in any of those major areas, we're setting a situation for much higher wheat prices. And I'm going to lay out a scenario for one of those here in just a second. Well, two of those here in just a second. So I hope that kind of makes sense. Wheat use, there's our food use. That's a billion bushels. It doesn't change. We fed a lot of wheat in the drought of 2012 when corn supplies were tight. But otherwise, we don't feed that much wheat in the U.S. The variable use category for wheat, it's corn. It's a bigger number relative or for wheat, but the same kind of variability of export potential is extremely important for our wheat market. Crop condition ratings, this is what they looked like last November when USDA suspended those for the year. This would be a kind of an average index through the year. Conditions were improving right up to the average, and now we're going to get new reports starting out here in the first part of April, and it's going to be lower. The question will be relative to trade expectations what that number is going to be, because if you look in the southern plains, you look at Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and Colorado, and the condition rating in November for Kansas was 349. Last week was 334. Oklahoma, 336, 301. Texas, 337. 285. Colorado's actually gotten better. Better condition ratings. But the Southern Plains as a whole, our ratings are going to be significantly lower than when we left off in November. So how much is that built into the trade? Or how much will the trade recognize these condition ratings? We'll start seeing that revealed. So let's look at a couple of highlight a couple of areas. Let's start in Hutchinson, Kansas. We're seeing the prospects for, a development in wheat and price reaction to that, much like we saw a year ago. So if you look at Hutchinson, Kansas, and look at some crop and weather data coming out of that particular station, this would be the average accumulated precipitation in Hutchinson, Kansas from January 1 through March the 27th when I put this chart together. A lot of us from West Texas will be able to relate to that precipitation line that they've seen in Hutchinson, Kansas. Not much happening on the precipitation side since the first year. So we're separating much, much further. You can't really see those numbers, but I think they're important here in just a second. That's about 75 millimeters of precipitation. So what, that's about 3 inches. Typically from January to the end of March, that's about 75. Temperature-wise, there's 0 Celsius. So that's your freezing line right about here. We've been about normal temperature-wise, up and down. But overall, I don't think you'd say that was much different than average. So it's been temperature about normal, but significantly drier in central Kansas. What about this one? This is southern Russia between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. And some of you with foreign languages much better than mine might help me pronounce that. Zimovniki, right in the heart of southern Russia's winter wheat-producing area, which is the primary wheat-producing area in Russia today. What does their weather map look like? Looks like that one. Accumulated precipitation, almost exactly the same as Hutchinson, Kansas, about 75 millimeters. They're not as dry relative to we are here in Kansas, but we have been below normal since the 1st of January and now seeing a little greater degree of separation as the crop's breaking dormancy, starting to wake up, starting to that vegetative reproductive stages. What I think is interesting to note is the temperature deviation for the month of March. It's been significantly warmer. So that crop is going to break dormancy more quickly, start developing into that vegetative and reproductive stage more quickly. And then what happened a year ago about in the middle of April? Had a freeze that hit that part of the world. It dropped below freezing for several days in a row in mid-April. And so this crop is grown in a part of the world that could still be very vulnerable to some deviations in those weather patterns as we move through this year. So I can't predict that's going to happen. But we are setting ourselves up for an area that's drier than normal and likely breaking dormancy much earlier than normal, which creates, again, some volatility perhaps around production numbers coming out of the number one exporter of wheat in the world.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
In today's tough farm economy, you need to make every dollar count. When choosing your cotton, consider West Texas varieties from Brownfield Seed and Delining. At only $125 a bag, these West Texas varieties are large seeded varieties that sheared out of the ground and have the yield potential that'll have you smiling all the way to the gin. Think outside the box and boost your bottom line with cotton seed from Brownfield Seed and Delining. Call 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Dr. Mark Welch is a Texas A&M AgriLife Extension grain marketing economist. In a presentation earlier this year,
our weather outlook, we're leaving this La Nina behind. We've left the bottom point of a very shallow La Nina, very short-lived La Nina. But the forecast from here on out this spring is back in the neutral zone, such that our weather patterns will be driven by some other things, but not under the influence directly as we've seen under the dry and warm La Nina, not getting back to a wet and cool El Nino at this point, but again, something a little more normal, which hopefully will be more favorable to us in the southern plains. So the wheat balance sheet, and again, there's the Outlook Conference of 25-26, then plug in a prospective plantings number where we had a wheat number that's the second lowest since 1919. Big drop in wheat acres. Winter wheat acres held up okay at spring wheat. We saw a big reduction in spring wheat acres, which lowered us from a 47 million acres planted to 45.4. Leave in USDA's yield at this point. I'm not going to play with that. I think we're probably going to be high. But leaving that for the time being, instead of seeing a 1% increase in supply at the Outlook Conference, now we've got a 1% decrease in supply. Expectations of use, very little change from the 24 wheat crop. So if you're decreasing supply and holding use steady, that's going to tighten up that supply situation. If we see a 4 to 5% increase in price based on that 1% change in supply, we could be looking at wheat prices. Again, this is the season average farm price from $5.50 a year ago. I think we could be back around this $5.50, maybe even to $6 wheat by the time this marketing year plays out, if we're trading fundamentals. Again, how much of that's just thrown out the window in this environment? I think that's the real key of trying to understanding where we're going. The seasonal index of wheat. Usually there's some marketing opportunities as you get into February, March, April, May, before a big break in the fall. We may yet have one of these in us in the wheat market. If it stays dry, we get a threat of a freeze in Kansas or southern Russia like we had a year ago. Again, holding this level at 560, I think is very important for our price movement moving forward and perhaps setting the stage for maybe some upward price movement before we get to harvest of this crop. But again, the U.S. condition looks it's going to be tough. And then look at some key conditions around the world.
Texas A&M AgriLife Extension grain marketing economist, Dr. Mark Welch. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Poultry and egg producers nationwide received less price-wise for their products in April, a 20% decline. That affected USDA's Livestock Prices Received Index, as producers noted an 8% decrease from the previous month. And that impacted USDA's latest Agricultural Prices Received Index, resulting in a 3.6% month-over-month decline. In addition to poultry and eggs, dairy producers also received less price-wise from March to April, offsetting a 2.4% increase in prices received by meat animal growers. The lower Livestock Production Index in April offset an almost 5% rise in prices received by crop producers. Most of the boost was provided by fruit and tree nut growers, who received 12% more price-wise for their commodities in April, and a slight uptick in prices producers received for feed grains. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.